Make sure we're recording. Oh, it's on?
Well,
okay, good.
When I arrived at Tam, they were the Tam Indians.
Mm-hmm.
And they used the Cleveland Indian logo, which is really kind of an insult to Indians.
Mm-hmm.
You know, big green Indian with a missing tooth and that whole thing, and that's what they used. And they used it for quite a while, and then when all the sensitivity thing came in, they really, you know, people objected to that Indian. So the principal at the time said, "Bruce, you draw something that's more noble. So we got to get rid of that cartoon thing." So I drew this, but it's not that. It doesn't look like the Indian on an Indian nickel. I think it's too much central casting Indian, but at least they changed that. And then a group of the teachers got together, and the librarian, and they convinced the school board to get rid of the Indian altogether.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a vote on what they would have, and of course they chose the red-tailed hawks.
Mm-hmm.
And they came. I was actually against the change.
Mm-hmm.
Because on my track team there was the Colliers, and their grandfather was head of the Bureau of Indian Affairs, and he was John Collier, and he says Indians aren't insulted by having Indians as mm-hmm. you know as mascots, so anyway, any more than Scots like me mm-hmm. are insulted by having Highlanders, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So they came over to my house and celebrated their victory, and I just had to keep my mouth shut.
Diplomacy. Well, I must say your drawing that you've done is a very noble drawing. You changed it from, like you said, a caricature into like a noble brave.
Yeah.
It's a profile. You can't see it on the paper.
Beautiful. It was funny drawing. Because, and I won't go off, and I'll talk about this later, the great hair issue for athletes, but the baseball coach, who was very much for the short hair,
mm-hmm.
I was for the long hair, mm-hmm. and he says, "I'm not going to use that Indian. Look, it has that long hair." And I said, "Did you ever see an Indian with short hair?" They didn't have barbers.
Perfect.
So anyway, that's the story.
Okay.
What do you, I mean, you're doing the whole Mill Valley thing. You're not just doing TAM, right?
Right. Our goal is to interview and discuss history, which I'm kind of interested in. Are we live now? Okay. So I understand you were from Los Angeles.
Yeah.
From Glendale.
Mm-hmm.
And you ran track at Glendale High.
No, Hoover High.
Oh, Hoover, okay.
Oh, not Glendale. They were our arch rival.
Ah, okay.
Herbert Hoover High School, yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And you were, what was your event? What were you involved in?
Low hurdles, mainly. And I was little.
Mm-hmm.
I was still, you know, in those days we had varsities, B's, and C's. And we only had a three-year high school.
Mm-hmm.
Ninth grade was still in junior high.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was a C for my first 2 years and a B my senior year. But we had practice meets at the beginning of the year, so the coach let me run the varsity low hurdles, and I beat everybody, so he made me stay varsity. And mm-hmm. But anyway, I was 2 years in the C's.
Mm-hmm.
And my second year, we won the league the first year. My second year, we won the Southern California Championships.
That's extraordinary.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic.
And I was the captain of the team.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's great. And then what happened after high school?
I went to junior college, Glendale JC,
mm-hmm.
right after the war. And it was just flooded with veterans. All these people were just back in the fall. And but I hurt myself and couldn't run.
Mm.
And I ran the next year. I just was injury plagued. Went off to Cal. Finally made the track team, but didn't do much.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So
Competing at a collegiate level is a very difficult, full time endeavor almost.
There's a whole other story with me at Cal, but I won't go into that.
Okay.
The my brother was very good in track.
Mm-hmm.
He was All-American long jumper.
Mm-hmm.
Also.
And so attending Berkeley, is that how you got settled into Northern California then?
Yeah, I came up here, and after college, I went back to Southern California, and the smog had gotten so bad that I remember when I went out with my brother and a friend of ours, and we ran around the track. I worked in Burbank, and we ran around the John Burroughs track, and I coughed for the next day, and so did my friend.
Mm-hmm.
My brother didn't, because he didn't run around the track, but it was just terrible. So I said, I'm just not staying down here, so I'm going back to Northern California, and I want to eventually get in Marin, because I know that the wind blows west to east, and they won't have much smog, which we don't, and it all blows down to San Jose. So I came back up here.
Mm-hmm.
I was, and then I had decided to go into teaching, and I taught my first 2 years at Sonoma, what they now call Sonoma Valley. They just called it Sonoma High School in those days.
Mm-hmm.
And then after 2 years, I got the job at TAM, and then I spent the rest of my time teaching at TAM.
Mm-hmm.
And starting in fall of 1963, and I retired in 1988.
And what did you teach?
I taught history. Social studies, but mostly history, world U.S. history mainly, but also world history.
Mm-hmm.
But during the times of turmoil, I taught PE, which wasn't PE. I'm an avid fisherman, and I taught kids to fly cast and took my fly tying things to school and taught the kids, showed them how to tie flies, and those times that qualified as PE.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So,
and
then I taught California history and a little bit of government.
Mm-hmm. Was it interesting from your vantage as a social studies and history teacher in starting in the early 60s to see a lot of changes, especially...
Oh, that's what I'm going to stress.
Berkeley being ground zero for that.
You
must have really kind of been aware of what was going on.
Yeah, well, the main thing I was going to cover... the other person you should talk to definitely is Norm Rogers, who happens to be my best friend.
Mm-hmm.
And he's one of the people that got the change from Indians to Hawks.
Mm-hmm.
He, Pete Belden, and... who else was in that group? Pat Gaynor. Those are the three.
Mm-hmm.
They're all still alive, all still kicking.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of sad, you know, over the years to see people pass by, you know,
mm-hmm.
pass away that that you knew.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, well, I was going to sort of go over the... kind of the changes that started.
Sure.
Uh-huh.
Absolutely. So,
okay.
Changes that started at TAM?
At TAM.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the 60s were, you know, are
great social upheaval.
Famous or infamous now for the changes.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started at TAM in the fall of 1963, and of course that's when the civil rights push was starting to get going. And at that time, Tamalpais High School is about, I don't know, 9 or 10% what we called Marin City. We never called them Negroes, we never called them Blacks. They were the Marin City kids, and then when you said Marin City, that meant that they were colored.
Mm-hmm.
But the very beginning, when I first got there, Marin City wasn't all black. No.
Mm-hmm.
No, they had, when I first got here, Marin City, it was the housing was the old Marin ship housing. You know, where Marin City came from. It was, they put all these army-style barracks practically up there, which they later made into apartments. to house the workers at Marin Ship, where they made, you know, cargo ships for World War II. And so it just stayed on. Mm-hmm. And when I first got there, it was very mixed, but then that changed. Mm-hmm. And then they built the new buildings and burned down the old ones. They used to use it. They'd burn one down and use it for the fire department practice to put it out.
Wow.
And I remember driving by there, and here's a one giant burning. And but anyway, that was but there. So there, and there was definitely racial tension at at TAM, and so they had to watch it. Up the street from TAM was a place called C's, which is now Kentucky Fried Chicken, and they had some skirmishes up there. And then out the back gate at the parking lot across the street from TAM was a kind of a restaurant place that had where kids could dance, and the kids used to go over there at noon all the time, and because it was right there, right across Homestead. And
what was the name of that? Do you remember?
Huh?
Remember the name of that?
No, I don't. That's what the those other fellas. What was
you said it was a restaurant. What they serve?
Huh?
What kind of food they serve?
I don't really. I never went there. I think they probably just, you know, hamburgers and things like that. It wasn't really a restaurant. It was kind of a takeout place. I suppose it'd be a, you know, kind of like a Dairy Bell or something, but it wasn't any kind of a something like that. It was just a private thing, and I don't remember the name of it.
And then the kids could go over there and not be so much under the watchful eye of the teachers.
Yeah, well, we had open campus, so they still do.
Yes.
So, unlike at Sonoma High, where you couldn't leave campus during the day.
And so, when you were in the early 60s, and these were occurring, were you involved in coaching at that time?
Yeah, I came there as the head track coach.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. For the boys' team?
There wasn't any girls' team.
Okay. Oh. That makes sense.
That's another story.
Yes.
But I thought I'd keep the coaching separate, entirely separate from, you know, kind of what went on at first. Mm-hmm. Anyways, you know enough from the 60s, that my very first semester, I had a study hall. They used to have study halls, and I had a study hall. I had a horrible schedule. They did that to new teachers. I had four classes, four different preparations. The they had devised a system which they thought was great at first. They had X classes and Y classes and regular classes. And the X classes were all the real good students, and they put them all together in a class. The Y students were all the underachievers, and they were largely Marin City kids. And believe me, it wasn't because these kids were dumb. It's just because of the way society was, and, you know, the kids just didn't try. And there were some very bright kids in there. But they were all in there. I remember the first thing I did was issue history books to them. And they didn't say, and then the head of the social studies department says, "You did what? You issued them books? They'll throw them in the closest ditch." I mean, that was the attitude, which I thought, you know, and although I came from a lily white town, there wasn't a black person in Glendale. But there, I didn't go into all my history. I before I was a teacher, I was a merchant seaman with Matson Lines. I was a officer over there and went to the South Pacific. But anyway, so I had worked with a lot of different people, and of course I'm the standard liberal, so I was kind of outraged at the attitude. But anyway, back to those classes. So if you had an X class, the kids were spectacular. The regular classes were just as boring could be. You didn't have any brights. The bright students had all been pulled out, and you just had, you know, just the rest of the kids, and they were nice kids, but they lacked the spark.
Mm-hmm. As a new teacher, did they give you all Y classes?
No, they gave me an X class of freshmen for world history. They gave me two regular classes, and they gave me a Y class. And they gave me the worst room in the school, which was between the drama department and the office. Mm-hmm. You might as well have been in Grand Central Station.
Mm-hmm.
So they later got rid of the room and turned it into a office.
Did you have any success stories from your Y class? Any kids that you promoted out of Y class into the...
No. I had some great kids in my history classes later, you know, U.S. history. They got rid of that system.
When?
I don't remember. It was just so long ago now. I don't remember how many years we had that. But they touted it as the great advance when they did it. And believe me, it wasn't.
Mm.
So anyway, I was just in that room, down in that room for 2 years, and then I got a room upstairs.
Mm. That must have been a big relief to you.
Oh, yeah. I had a beautiful room. The back, the windows, small room, but the windows looked out onto the Orange Court.
Mm-hmm. Oh, fabulous.
Yeah.
Right.
And so it was nice. It was a little bit of a corner. It was, you know, corner room there. I was in room 14, but it was real pretty. I remember I had a coaches meeting in there and coaching, and the coaches came in and they said, "Oh my, what a beautiful spot! You know, look at this. Look at you. Look out on the orange trees and the whole thing." Of course, Tam's campus. If you go way back, do you know that the way back, this is before my day, before Redwood and Drake, that Tam's was campus was on the Gray Line Garden Tour.
Mm-mm.
There's a little history for you.
Mm.
That the campus was so gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
It was considered. It was written up. Norm told me he saw that it was written up as one of the 10 most beautiful high school campuses in the United States. Well, look at it now. Since they've rebuilt it.
Yeah, it's nice.
Absolutely
now.
Gorgeous.
Now, yes.
Fantastic.
I was there with two daughters throughout the construction, both daughters.
You didn't go to TAM.
No, but my daughters did.
Oh, I see.
But when you say the Orange Court, that really does strike a note, because that is, it's a magical spot. It's like something out of Europe. It's this orange little grove. There are a couple of orange trees set in the middle of a courtyard.
Well, there's four orange trees around like that, and then there's a fountain in the middle.
Yeah, it's like something out of Valencia,
really
something in Spain.
Anyway, the so I'm just trying to put this all together now. The what the changes? It was a standard school. Teachers were expected to wear coat and ties. Kind of white shirts and all. I remember once Chuck Crawford mentioned this. I'd forgotten about it. He says, "Bruce, one time," he says, "you came in, you looked really good. You had on a, naturally you had on a sport coat, but you were wearing a turtleneck. It was in the winter." And I said, "You really look sharp." I got admonished by the principal for not having a tie. That's the way it was, but the changes that were to come about, because not only was did Mill Valley start mountain biking and banana republics and that kind of a things, but a lot of the students from TAM were the early hippies on the Hay-Ashbury, because I did my shopping for track at a place that was about five doors off Hay-Ashbury, a sporting goods store. And I'd go over there and I'd be walking along and kids would say, "Hey, Teach, you got any spare change?"
Wow.
They'd be TAM students. But so that the first big change that came in was the hippie thing. And that was just a massive change. And so as that got going, and then that blended right in to the whole anti-Vietnam War protesting thing, which got big. But first with the hippie thing, I mean, it got to the point. I remember one of our teachers, social teachers, showed up at school. He had on bib overalls, no shirt, no shoes, his hair in a giant, he wasn't a color guy, but a huge
Afro.
blonde afro,
What?
and then coming to school, and some of the teachers with mini skirts on, holy smoke, you know, and then the kids, the way they just dressed. The Beatles, of course, were going big time, and the long hair came in, and so that came along, and then they changed the curriculum to sort of fit the change, and that's when I taught fly tying, and you didn't know who was going to show up in your class. I can remember having, you know, to take roll. I don't even know what they did about reporting to the state because, you know, I'd had 25 kids and 6 or 7 kids would show up. 2 doors up from TAM, they rented a house. The school rented district rented a house, and I think Norm called. They called it Peace House or Freedom House or something like that.
Just going up Miller
Yeah,
towards
district.
Cities.
Yeah, just the same side of the street. And but what it was a crash pad. And if the kids just couldn't deal with school that day, they would go up and crash.
I think that house is still there, although there's plans to
Yeah.
take it down.
Yeah.
It's they're gonna remodel, but anyways,
Yeah. But
yeah,
had you ever heard of
eventually.
that?
Yes.
That
Yeah, it's a
crash house.
red house. I don't know if it's the
I don't
same
remember,
one, but
but
it
you'd
was an
heard about
abandoned
the.
house that kids hang out at even much later, decades later even, it was still an abandoned house
Yeah.
that people would go to.
Well, they were that was our crash pad. And then
Did you ever go there? No.
no.
Okay.
No, I guess I didn't make the
Fraternity.
huge change. I certainly never came to school in bib overalls. I wore in that respect, I'm probably a bit of a social secure conservative, but a political and economic liberal.
Yes.
But maybe that's a little my Glendale background. You know, Glendale became so incredibly right wing that George Lincoln Rockwell, the American Nazi, finally settled there, said it was the most
Awful.
patriotic. You know, I had one of my kids that I knew from high school and ran for the city council on the John Birch ticket. I mean, but anyway, but you know, we quit wearing the ties and started wearing sweaters and things like that, and you know that which was most of the teachers did, but some of them went to extremes. But they taught all different classes. We had a teacher with an African background that taught Swahili.
Amazing.
And they were famous. They had a spent a day kind of dealing with the racial tensions and all, and it made the national news.
You mean
I
when?
mean, all the papers have made the New York
Wait,
Times.
what made the papers?
Oh yeah, it made off.
What's
I
it?
went. My brother was in the diplomatic corps, and he was stationed in Washington at the time. He they for a while with the Commerce Department, and they had a lot of African American women working there. And they heard that I was from Tamil Pious High School. God, the office filled up. Everybody wanted to know all about you teach at that school? You know, it was on national television.
Wait, I don't understand why it was a national TV, just
Well,
because all
because
these changes you're talking about.
it was just the day it was just given over to kids all getting together and expressing themselves on their feelings. And of course, as a coach, I had a lot of the African American kids on the track team. So, but anyway, they had this, what I forget, sort of, it was just sort of a sensitivity day.
Mm-hmm.
And it just made big news.
It's a nice thing when a school's students get together for a
mm-hmm.
positive solution. I've heard that that was very oh, yeah. notable. But anyways. All right, and so yeah. we were talking about the changes, particularly.
Yeah. That got going, and then the whole Vietnam War thing got going,
mm-hmm.
and so we had a huge protest, and the teachers, not all, there were always a few teachers who wouldn't give up a day's pay or anything like that, but most of us, and we marched uptown in Mill Valley
mm-hmm.
in the pouring rain. It just poured rain,
mm-hmm.
and I had drawn painted a big thing, no war.
Mm-hmm.
God, I should have got, I probably have some of the pictures upstairs someplace.
That'd be great.
Okay, I'll look at the end.
We'll add it, yeah.
But we all walked up. Yeah, I have pictures of us all going up there. My friend Norm with a big cigar. But the most notable, we had another one of the U.S. history teachers was named Bob Sherman. In fact, one of the kids sent in to Herb Cain and he says, Sherman and Grant are teaching history at Table Pius High School, and the South is demanding equal time. One of the kids said it in. And Bob Sherman had been to Vietnam. I used to work summers as an officer going to the South Pacific. He was an ordinary seaman.
Mm.
And he would go to see in the summer time and, you know, be scraping paint. But he went to Vietnam and saw what, you know, and came back and spoke to the whole student body in Mead Theater.
Mm.
You know, and is that still there?
Yes, it is.
Uh-huh. They tore down the building, though.
Right.
There used to be a big stage with curtains and everything up there. And
with the amphitheater.
Yeah, the amphitheater. And they tore that down. They didn't put another one up, did they?
I don't believe so.
I don't think so. But anyway, and he spoke to the whole campus. But anyway, Bob Sherman marched up there, no raincoat, no umbrella, just got drenched. And he said, the soldiers in Vietnam are out in the rain getting drenched, and I'm going to go out in the rain and get drenched. And we marched right up into Mill Valley, big anti-war.
Most of the student body, like hundreds of people?
Oh, those students all poured out and went with us, too. Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's so memorable.
Hmm?
It totally. Seems very memorable.
Oh, yeah. Very, very, very memorable.
Mm.
And so that went. And then, of course, we pulled out and the war got over.
Mm.
And the draft ended, so things turned, sorry, you know, the students pass on through, and things change back mm-hmm. at TAM quite rapidly.
Mm-hmm.
But then Oliver Bryn, it was like the kids vanished. And when I got to TAM, it had around 1,800 students. And Drake had around 1,800 students, and Redwood had almost 2,600 students.
Mm-hmm.
And another story, of course, because the people at Redwood tried to pull Redwood out of the Tamalpais School District and form their own school district because they wanted to be the Lowell of the North, they called it.
Mm-hmm.
And they tried to pull it out, and of course they had. When they built Redwood, they gerrymandered the attendance area and put all of the wealthy areas
mm-hmm.
together.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't work. But they were thinking of pulling it out. And then the schools got really small. TAM went down to around 800 students.
Amazing.
And so Drake got into the 700s.
Mm-hmm.
And Redwood got way down. It shrunk more than anything else. I don't know if they got under 1,000 or not, but they got way down. And we had meetings. They talked about putting all the kids of the district at Redwood, mm-hmm. or closing Redwood and just having Tam and Drake mm-hmm. because of the distance between. And they had meetings mm-hmm. talking over this thing. And, of course, the schools have never gotten back up to the size that they once were. Mm. You know, I mean...
What's Tam today? Do you know?
I don't know what Tam is today, but I know that the schools are packed now.
Yeah.
Although it fluctuates. I know that they've had just recently...
Yeah, they've been getting bigger,
year.
But I... But Tam doesn't have 1,800 students, neither does Drake.
1,400 when my daughters attended, or something like
that. Oh, really?
1,200, 1,400.
Yeah, I was going to say more like 12, I think.
Probably, yeah.
And I don't know how many at Redwood. It's the biggest school around, but it's mm-hmm. never gotten back to what it was in those days.
Right.
Of course, Marin County in those early days wasn't nearly as expensive.
Right.
In the 60s, early 60s, as it is now.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Things just, you know, came back pretty much to normal. And in the 70s, you know, the teachers never went back to wearing ties or having to wear ties. Some did. But went back to the more conventional. Although they've always tried to have, you know, kind of some of the different classes.
Mm-hmm.
Then I finally retired in 1988.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's when I turned 60.
Mm-hmm.
And I probably wouldn't have retired quite that bit, but the schools had, they were trying to change things over,
mm-hmm.
and they tried to weed out some of the teachers.
Mm-hmm.
I felt so good when the superintendent came to me. He had no idea. I always tended to look a little younger than I was. And the superintendent says, I had no idea that you were 60, you know, and we desperately need the spot. But he says, you don't need to retire. mm-hmm. He says, we're not pressuring you. Mm-hmm. But I went ahead and retired. So
mm-hmm. that's a really, I think Tam has been fortunate to have had
mm-hmm.
someone where, you know, you gave them not only your expertise mm-hmm. and teaching talents, but your coaching talents. And mm-hmm.
As I said, we had those big changes, the hippie
right.
thing, the Vietnam War, you know, the civil rights worked in there. Well, I started to mention at the very beginning, that this is kind of jumping around, but first I had that study hall.
Mm-hmm.
Great big gig. I had 90 kids in it or something. And it was very strict. It was a study hall. You didn't say boo.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you caused a problem, they gave you detention after school, which was also held in that room. But I was holding, in November, I was sitting there, and a girl had gone down to the office with a pass to see her counselor,
mm-hmm.
and she came back and whispered in my ear, she says, the president has been shot.
Oh, wow.
Just
right.
just finished it. But as you see, I read history.
Mm.
But anyway, she whispered, and of course that was, you know, the great shocker that kids all went to fourth, that was third period, and they went to fourth period, and then they let school out
mm-hmm.
because of that. So that's how I started it, my first semester at Tam High, and then,
mm-hmm.
so,
yeah.
Anything specific that you wanted to...
How about your coaching? Did you coach all?
Oh, yeah, I was going to, I just wanted to keep that separate. When I first got to Tam, you know, like the other coaches, naturally my coaching slipped into the classroom
mm-hmm.
because a lot of the track kids were in my classes,
mm-hmm.
and I would talk about it. But then at those days, all the coaches were teachers.
Right.
I mean, and the fact that you were willing to coach helped you get the job. That's probably how I got the job at Tam
mm-hmm.
because they needed a track coach.
Mm-hmm.
And So the but anyway, one of our other social studies teachers was the football coach. Another social studies teachers was the track. I mean, was the basketball coach, and one of them worked as also as the wrestling coach. So they see virtually all of your teachers, coaches now are outside. They're not teachers. And I think coaching has suffered because of it. So the but I think I've kind of got what I was going to say. 84. But anyway, that's oh, I would let it slip in. But then I realized that this wasn't right. And I heard the kids would be critical of some of the other teachers. All that teacher ever talks about in his class is this athletic team, you know. So I just did a complete reverse. Came into class, first day, wrote track on the board. And I said, "See that five-letter word? We don't mention it in this class." And I erased it. And I totally stopped any mention of track in my classes. You could not bring that up. Any kid that wanted to ask about it, and we were very successful in track, and but no way did I ever talk about it later.
Did you do cross country also?
I did it a little bit. Actually, when I came there, the athletic director said, "Well, I've made you cross country coach too," and I said, "I don't want to be cross country coach." So they had a fellow named Craig Veazey. Who I was on the phone not too long ago. He lives up in Oregon. And he had pretty well started. Well, he didn't start cross country. Old Glid Benefield started cross country at TAM, but there was no league. And then Veazey came in and took it over and helps get it into a league, make it into a league sport. But of course, there were no girls. So they were, but early on, at first at Redwood and then at TAM, they started pushing girls also, but they weren't regular members, but they had girls running with them. But anyway, so I came as a track coach, and here was the huge changes there, that I took the job sight unseen. But I was going down to wealthy Marin, right? It had the most primitive athletic facilities I've ever seen in my life. It had where the baseball field is now.
Yes.
Well, there were two of them. There was one over by the street by Miller, and the other one over on by Homestead, like this. And they weren't where, well, they are where there is now, but the track wasn't where the track is now. The track was up around the corner at the end of the baseball fields, and they used to run the 220 on the straightaway. They'd run right down between, they'd have to stop the baseball game so they could run the 220 down the straightaway. And of course, I changed that immediately and I said, "Forget that, we'll run the 220 on the curve." But the track was incredibly primitive. It had virtually no curb. You weren't sure exactly where it was. They had some 4x4 posts is kind of around dangerous, and it was much lower, and it was just horrible. And they had filled the area by sucking bay bottom mud up and filled an area that had been a marsh. And what happened when it rained? You couldn't walk out there. All the goo would stick to your feet. And you'd miss days and days of practice because the field was so low. Where there was only two tennis courts, and they came out like this, and then it dropped 5 feet. Now it's all level now. It dropped 5 feet and then went on out there. And it was just horrible. Anyway, how much I was affected, I don't know. George Gustafson, the gym is named after him. And he had been a coach there forever. And he had me come and speak to the boosters, and we had a really high-powered group of boosters. I mean, one was an attorney general, and I mean, you know. And I'm pretty outspoken. And I said, you built Drake, and they have a beautiful athletic field. And then you built Redwood, and they have a beautiful athletic field, and we have this. I told him, I said, frankly, if I had ever seen this before I took the job, I'd have never come here. And, I mean, I came down from Sonoma, and our field facilities were infinitely better in a relatively poor school district. So, anyway, and George afterwards, he said, boy, you were really outspoken to them. I said, George, I just told him the truth. I said, this is a disgrace. I went to sea that summer, and I came back, and they said, well, where are you going to practice this next year, Grant? And I said, well, I guess out in this field. He says, no, you're not. During the summer, they adopted the master plan, and they're going to rebuild the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you remember they were building out, they were going to build Marincello or whatever it was out on the highland. Did you ever
out in the Tennessee Valley?
Out at the end of Tennessee Valley, and they did all that excavation work, and they had got all that gravel. You know where all that decomposed granite went?
That's now under the field.
It's under the field. Great stuff.
Wow. Perfect.
It took them like 9 months. These trucks just coming in. Constantly dumping, they had to fill that whole marsh area.
Like, what year was this? Do you remember about like coming?
Sure, 65.
65.
My first track season was 64, and then in and then 65, we worked out. At first, we tried to work out at Ed McGuire, but they had that little field. But then we went over and shared Redwood. Which did not make Redwood very happy. The coach at first and I were kind of like this, but now we're real good. He's long retired, and I still call him up and even go up and stay with him and play golf with. We're old friends. He became the coach at College of Marin. But anyway,
what was his name?
Tony Bailey. His wife was a star golfer. She was women's champ of San Francisco. But anyway, so they built the whole new track, and I got a lot of say-so in the designing of it, and they built this beautiful track. And I remember one of the college coaches came, he says, this is the best dirt track in Northern California. Mm-hmm. And so we had that nice track, and I'm kind of a fanatic of that thing, so I really knocked myself out keeping it up, and so we had this good job. It was a lot of work. It actually drove me out of coaching finally. It was just so much work to keep the thing up.
The maintenance.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But with sure on the old field, they told me one time, you know, and when it really rained and the tides came in, the field would totally flood. And the kid says, oh, yeah. He says, we've had outboard motor races around the goalpost, bring the boats down. It was so bad. Mm-hmm. But
I can't imagine how much.
And of course, since I went back and for a while and was on the planning committee when they were redoing everything, mm-hmm. and I got together with the fellow who's the head track coach now at TAM. Mm-hmm. And we basically designed that new field. Mm-hmm. I think I still have a design. Since I do artwork, I drew it all up, and mm-hmm. and they followed it. The guys that were doing it, and they get tired of all the bureaucracy, and my phone would ring, and they said, "Hey, Grant, this and these were the guys that were doing it. How about this? How about that?" So we got to that beautiful track down there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that seems like it's going to last a long time.
Oh, yeah. So it's really nice. Well, we, a lot of the, I got involved with Redwood and Drake, too.
Mm-hmm.
But Anyway, they built that new field. Now, the changes of track, when we started, we had it was all boys. We had, although actually, right off, early on, I had a track, after-school track unit for the girls, because I was very sensitive of that we didn't have, we have women in the Olympic Games, but we didn't have track team. All the girls had, I think, was field hockey and some six-girl basketball teams, and they didn't have much. But anyway, so, and we had varsity Bs and Cs, and you became a B or a C by age, height, age, and weight. It was an exponent system. And so the, and that we had that, I'm trying to think, we used that system until the later 60s, and then the coaches, kind of led by the El Cerrito coach, Hale Roach, who's an excellent coach, we got rid of the C team and went to a freshman teams. Because they said, you know, they'll have some great big kid come in, and he's a varsity, but he's a ninth grader, and he wants to do the shot, and he couldn't, I mean, there's nothing for him to do, because he's
not developed.
He's not. So let's just have freshman teams. So we had freshmen. And then that, then I began pushing. What happened in 1967, a woman at TAM, who's still a friend of mine, Janice Villasenor, started girls track, but it was run separately from boys track. They had their own meets, they had different kinds of events, but they had track. And so that went through, and then she finally handed it over to the cross country coach. I think he coached girls track, but in maybe as late as 1973. But I pushed as early as 70. I pushed for, tried to get the league to, I said, let's just integrate girls right into the boys team. And they said, well, we'll have four teams. I said, no. I said, we don't need three boys teams. We can have two, and we'll have a girls team. And I remember that Tara Linda coach, I'm coaching at Tara Linda now, by the way. I'm just an unpaid assistant, but, and I remember the coach said, well, how are you going to get the girls to the meets? And I said, well, on the bus. He said, you're not putting any broads in my bus. Guess who was the first guy to have a girl win state? Him. But anyway, so any, so they, and I pushed that, and then along came Title IX, see, which demanded that the girls be equal. So, and starting in the season of 1974, the girls' track was integrated with the boys' track, and they took the B team became Frosch Soft B. If you were a freshman, you could be on it, or a sophomore, or you could still be a B, which means you could be a senior and be a B because you were smaller or younger, and then a varsity team. And so that came in, and that was, and track became hugely popular because there was no girls soccer at the time at first, and there was no, and so, I mean, we'd have as many as 55 girls on the track team.
And so,
but TAM still does.
Were these changes with the, you know, two boys track teams, one girls track team, and then divided into the things? Was that at TAM and Drake?
Oh, yeah. It was for the whole league.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. The whole league had girls track right from the beginning. And
it was popular, as you
said. And we were very successful. We went 6 years undefeated. We had one tie with Berkeley High, which had 3,500 students. And, oh, we beat them twice in the girls. We didn't meet them in the boys, just in the girls. We beat them twice and tied once. And we went for all those years without a loss. And then when they started, some of the other schools were slower to get going than we were. And remember, we went up to Santa Rosa Relays in the first year they had girls' events up there. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, we just killed everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So
what year was that again?
Hmm?
What year again was
74.
That? 74.
We had a girl, Kate Kyes, got third in the state. They had the girls' state meet. But they only took the winner. That first girls' state meet, they only took the winner of each section.
Mm-hmm.
So they had no trials, just finals. But Kate had won the northern section, so she went. And then the next year, she graduated. The next year, her younger sister, and that next year they had trials. She got third in the state the next year. And we had a huge contingent of kids that made the state meet that next year. And then she was a junior. Then the next year she got real sick.
Hmm.
And then her backup won state. And she was the last, Linda Broderick.
Wow.
Grab the one on the right in the front. That one.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Okay, hold
schools. Mm-hmm. And Linda is coaching at Branson.
Mm.
And she's coaching this super young girl who is the daughter of a girl that ran for me at TAM.
Oh, my.
Uh-huh. And the girl is in the fall won state in cross country in the small schools.
Mm-hmm.
And got, and then track, she got fourth in the state 3,200, which is about 2 miles. And they're an interesting character because her mother wasn't that good, but she went to Cal, and she married a fellow who had been a Canadian Olympian.
Mm-hmm.
And after they got done, they invented a power thing called the power bar.
Ah. Yeah, that's it.
and became very, very wealthy. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, tragically, some years ago, he walked out of the Ross post office and dropped dead.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Mm. A guy named Brian Maxwell. So, and she was left, she was pregnant and had 5 kids.
Oh, my.
But a lot of money. They sold a power bar to Nestle.
Nice.
So.
And then their daughter.
But their daughter, mm-hmm. she had kids, and this one daughter, Julia, she's a junior now, and she is really good. She's already set the county record for the 3,200 or the 2 mile, and she has probably a break. Linda still holds the yellow time record for the mile in Marin, set way back in 1976.
Goodness.
And that's the last person from our county to win state.
Mm.
We've only had 6 winners.
Mm-hmm.
Boys and girls all those years. But anyway, that's kind of a story. But coming on with the track, we were very successful.
Mm-hmm.
And
that must have been rewarding for you. You know,
that's why I'm still coaching.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It gives me something to do besides play golf.
Mm-hmm.
And it keeps you kind of a little bit in shape too. You wouldn't know it too much, but I get out there and I run back and forth and all. I coach. I just coach 3 days a week, but I coach Mondays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays.
Well, I just want to interject one thing because it is an interesting aspect of your career.
Uh huh.
Not only the social change, you know, and, mm-hmm. and things when you were teaching and mm-hmm. the students around you, and then your coaching career. Running particularly
mm-hmm.
has become a commonplace thing. Whereas in the 60s, who would have ever heard of, oh yeah, I'm going to go run.
Uh-huh.
But nowadays, millions of people run.
When the jogging came in.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
In the 70s.
But I got involved in senior track at the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And when they first started, I'm trying to think, and they wrote it up in Track and Field News or Sports, and they kind of made fun of it because the very first, for people 40 and over, and of course nobody had stayed in shape, and it was just kind of a joke. But let me tell you, it changed quickly. I'm trying to think, I wasn't 40 that first. Well, you had to be actually 40. And I was turned 40 that year, so it was 1968. I turned 40, but I didn't turn 40 until October, and the meet was in July, so I couldn't run it the first year. But I got in shape and ran the next year. So, and I did it, and you know, I knew I should have known better. I overtrained. Ran way too much, and the old injury bugaboo settled in. Although I, 1 year, I did manage to win the, when there was no competition, let me tell you. This sounds great, but it wasn't. I managed to win the national championships in the triple jump, and I have this AAU champion and all this stuff, and it didn't amount to a hill of beans. In those early days, there just wasn't any competition. But it, now it's, oh, now the marks are, they're spectacular. And they have all these different age groups. But I, because I got hurt, I quit doing it.
And so do you get to go now when you're, you mentioned you're helping at, was not
Terralinda.
Oh, Terralinda. Do you end up going to some of the meets then when they compete?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm the hurdle coach and the jump coach. You know, oh sure, I go to the meets. So I have to. In fact, when we have a home, we couldn't. Carolinda had. They only start last year. They hadn't finished all their track. They had a brand new all the weather track, but they hadn't done the field events. But they finally did it this summer. Last summer, so we're going to be hosting track meets now, and I'll be scoring them.
Oh, great.
And announcing them. You know, I'll announce them and score them.
That's great.
And I've done that a lot in the past, so the so I stay very involved. But no, over the years, I quit... I retired in 88 and, of course, quit coaching. And I didn't coach for a couple of years. As you see, I do rock work.
Oh, you did this?
Wow. Wait till you see my backyard.
Oh, it's beautiful. That flagstone?
I went and collected the rocks up in Sonoma.
Oh, great.
Brought them back in my, first in my old Plymouth Duster and then in my van. But, that you might have noticed that there's a rock wall thing in the front. There was a lot more in the back. The I terraced the whole yard just to make it simple, because before, you know, everything just kind of ran off and made it easy to handle. But anyway, I stayed away from TAM for 2 years, and but the new coach just didn't work out. So the athletic director, who was a woman, Beth Jury, just came in and says, Bruce, you just got to come back and get this thing put back together. So I went back and, let me see, he was there in 89 and 90. So I went back in 91. And, it was in a shambles. But we managed to tie for the league championship with the girls that first year. But I didn't plan to stay, so I handed it over to one of my former girl track captains named Jenny Seranian, and she took it over. She helped me in 91 and took it over in 92, and then she came to me and she said, Coach, I'm just not ready for this. She says, I, you know, so I went back in 93 and 94. And Jenny was my assistant, and we worked together, and then she got a lot better at it. And our girls' team went undefeated for 2 years. So,
what do you attribute that success to? What do you attribute that success to? Do you think it was preparation? Do you think it was a, you know, you had an exceptional crop of athletes? Or
what, well, we had the... both, but what it makes is... I'm highly organized, and organization is important, and preparation. When the kids came out to the track team, they knew exactly what they were going to be doing. I posted a workout for them every day. And they knew exactly what they were going to be doing, which is important. Because I have a friend of mine that's helping at another school, which I won't mention right now, and he says, it's so disorganized. Okay, secondly, you have to learn all the events. When I started at TAM, I had one assistant. You know, and we'd have 60, 70 boys out there, and one assistant who, to be honest, weren't trained much. And early on, we didn't have the discus in Southern California. I didn't even know the discus. And when I got to TAM, they didn't even have a discus ring. They threw off a wooden platform, which is illegal. And I didn't know the pole vault. I had, and I didn't have anybody to help much. And to be honest, those kids didn't get much help. They just had to sort of work on their own because I had all the other things to do. But we were very successful in distance. I bought a great big clock like this with a hand that went around once every minute. And you could see it from across the track. They used them in swimming. That was, the guy made them for swimming teams. They would put them up at the end of the lanes, you know. And I could plug it in and the kids could time themselves. And I would just put up an assignment for the distance runners, but they always knew what they were going to do, and they could time themselves on the clock. And then I had my assistant doing the starting practice with a gun and things like that, and I would just run around trying to coach everything else. But I did know the events. I mean, I went to clinics. I mean, I got taught the triple jump and the long jump by the greatest long jump and triple jump coach in the world, Tommy Tellis, who coached Carl Lewis and had some rather good people. And you had to do that. You know, had to go learn all the different events and be interested in the different events. One of the schools, the thing they have a coach, he's an excellent coach for distance, but he doesn't do anything else. And his track teams or nothing, because he doesn't do any, and he's not even interested. You know, he doesn't know pole vault pole from a discus. So I did learn all the different events, and then eventually I got more coaches. And then, so we have, up at Terra Linda now, we have a, you know, the head coach who does the sprints and pole vault and things, and then we have a weight coach, and then we have a, this year we got a woman who's just the high jump specialist, and we have a distance coach, and you have me for the, and then the head coach. So, so we have it covered, and we don't have a heck of a lot of talent though, but because of the nature of the student body in that part of San Rafael. But I was pretty much an eager beaver in the. The whole thing. What happened, I coached through 71, and we won a couple. We won the varsity championship in 66, and I had a picture of that, and all the kids that were on that varsity team that won the league, and there was one Caucasian kid. Every single other kid on the team was black kid, Northern City kid. And our B's also won the league championship. Now, about three of those had run varsity during the year, but we dropped them back for the league meet. And because we had a super sprinter, and I had breakfast with him 3 days ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Fantastic.
And he still holds the school records at TAM. And,
in the 100 meter or?
And 200 meter, yeah.
What was his name?
Alan Lee, and he's Caucasian. He's not, you know, other people say, well, is he black? I said, no. Well, he's Chinese. And I said, no, he just, I said, you know, Robert E. Lee. Well,
he's a good runner.
So anyway, he, and then that one picture up there, on the far side, there's girls up there, and that girl, remember, she came into TAM with transfer from Florida. Skinny little gal, but by the end of the season, she was on our girls' ball relay that got seventh in the state finals, and they still have the TAM school record, and she holds the school record in the high jump still.
What's her name?
You never want to do that. She's a real good friend of mine. It'll pop into my head. If you hadn't asked me, I could have told.
Yeah, I know.
Casey
sorry.
Overfield. And she was valedictorian too, and she married the valedictorian from Redwood.
Wow.
Nice match.
Yeah.
Perfect match.
And he's a star road runner, and their daughter is a very good distance runner at Brown University. But anyway, that's here nor there. Well, I'm just trying to think about other things. I'm sure that there are things that, Norm would say that I forgot. He had, you know, he became the head librarian, and so he was in the much more in the hub of the school than I was. And so he could fill you in with lots of goodies.
Well, you mentioned you play golf, and
did you ever play golf
at that Mill Valley course?
I did. When I first got to TAM, we were still playing golf. In fact, we played against, I remember the teachers played against the golf team, match play, and on that Mill Valley course. The only time I ever played, and I didn't, needless to say, I didn't like the course. But then I quit golf. I didn't play golf, for almost 30 years. Quit entirely, because I got so busy working in this house. This, you know, I've replaced everything. Replaced all the windows, you know, did all the rock work, put in all the sliders. That deck wasn't out there when I got this house.
I gotta save this file.
So I didn't play golf, and I didn't start playing golf again until I was turning.